Okay, good morning, Belgium. I'm very happy to be here at the SharePoint conference, talking about, not SharePoint conference, the Tech Days in Belgium, talking about SharePoint 2010. For the people that don't know me, my name is Jan Tielens. I work at U2U over here in Belgium and Brussels. And I'm very happy to be here with Scott, Scott Hillier. And he's going to do some sessions with me together. So, that's Scott. Right.
Yeah, I'll just take a couple of seconds to introduce myself and then leave you with Jan. But my name is Scott Hillier. I'm a Microsoft SharePoint MVP and an independent consultant. I've authored somewhere around 12 books, working on probably five for SharePoint 2010, and spend my time doing training and consulting and also working on some real-world projects. So I'll have a chance to talk to you a little bit later in the session, but I'm going to sit down now and just let Jan take it away.
Okay, right? Cool. Thanks. Okay, first session for today is called An Overview of the SharePoint 2010 Developer Platform. And it's quite a challenge for me to speak only 1 hour, something like that, about everything that's interesting to talk about as a developer in SharePoint 2010. I'm going to try to do that anyway. And as you can see on the agenda, we're going to focus on three big topics. First of all, I'm going to talk about the developer productivity, so how you can work faster, better as a developer. I'm also going to talk about the rich platform services that we've got in SharePoint 2010, how you can store data and lists and document libraries, stuff like that, in a more efficient way. And to finish off, we're going to talk about flexible deployment, what's new with SharePoint solutions, sandbox solutions, that kind of stuff. First of all, developer productivity. The first thing that is quite interesting to mention is the fact that in SharePoint 2010, you can install SharePoint on top of a client operating system, which is quite a change if you compare it to SharePoint 2007. Remember, in SharePoint 2007, you needed to run Windows Server 2003 or 2008 to be able to do your development, probably. And now you can just have Windows 7 or Windows Vista, and you can install SharePoint 2010 on top of that. You can either go for SharePoint Foundation or SharePoint Server. By the way, SharePoint Foundation is the successor of Windows SharePoint Services, and SharePoint Server is the successor of Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007. There's only one thing that you should be aware of, and that's the fact that only 64-bit operating systems are supported. Even if you install on Windows 7 or Windows Vista, you have to make sure you've got a 64-bit operating system. I think it's quite obvious it's not supported for production. You can only do that for development. So it's not possible, for example, to join an existing farm by making use of your Windows 7 development environment. You can only make use of a standalone installation for SharePoint 2010, which is a quite interesting thing, I think, to have in your team of developers. Another very big thing for developers is the fact that we've got Visual Studio 2010. And you may think, well, didn't we have Visual Studio 2008 for SharePoint 2007? Well, the support for us as SharePoint developers is much better in Visual Studio 2010. To give you an example, you probably know the extensions that we had in Visual Studio 2008 called the Visual Studio Extension for Windows SharePoint Services 3.0. I was not a very big fan of them. I always said they're nice to do demos and that kind of stuff, but I never used them in real life. And now the support that we've got in Visual Studio 2010 is much, much better. So templates for SharePoint are built in into Visual Studio. I've got a bunch of templates for items, for workflows, for features, event handlers, you name it. So you will be much more productive as a developer. The cool thing about those extensions in Visual Studio 2010 is, of course, that all the work that you do will be packaged for you into a SharePoint solution. So there is no make cap tool anymore that you need to call manually with a DDF file, no WSP builder anymore. Everything can be done just out of the box in Visual Studio 2010. And I'm actually a very big fan of those extensions, so I think they're pretty good. Besides those templates that you've got in Visual Studio 2010, we also have, for example, the Server Explorer that can connect to SharePoint sites as well, not only SQL servers anymore, but also SharePoint servers. And of course, we've got that integration with Team Foundation Server or any source control system that you may want to use. And that's actually the very first demo that I would like to show you. Not very difficult. I've got over here Visual Studio 2010. And in Visual Studio 2010, I can just go like this. I'm going to create a new project. And as you can see, at the left-hand side, there is a SharePoint section that has been added. And you've got a bunch of templates that you can make use of. I'm just going to make use of, let's say, a pretty nice one. It's called a Visual Web Art. Quick question, how many of you have built web part for SharePoint 2007? So quite a lot of people. Then you probably know how web parts were developed in Visual Studio 7 with lots of code. You needed to build code to generate your user interface. What's a visual web part in SharePoint 2010? Well, it's basically a web part that you can build by making use of the designer, the visual designer in Visual Studio. Behind the scenes, your web part will make use of a user control. Maybe you know that technique from SharePoint 2007, but now we've got that supported just out of the box. For example, I can name my project Tech Days Demo 1, something like that. Let's hit OK. Over here, I've got a question asked by Visual Studio. First of all, I can specify what is the site that I would like to make use of for debugging. I'm just going to fill out the URL of a site that I've got on my environment. Now, pay attention, this is only used for debugging, so it has nothing to do to which SharePoint site you're going to deploy to eventually on your production server. And finally, I've got a question over here, if you would like to make use of a sandbox or a farm solution. Now, we will come back to sandbox solutions later on in this talk, so I'm just going to leave it to the default option for this one, which is the farm solution. And there we go. We've got the visual web part, which is created, as you can see, as a folder over here in my solution explorer. I'm a little bit lazy today, let's say, and I'm going to switch to design mode for this visual web part when Visual Studio is done loading. And I can just make use of my toolbox to grab, let's say, a very exciting button, drag and drop it on top of my designer, and let's say I've got a text box as well. For an event handler of my for my button, very easy, just double-click on the button. And let's write, for example, over here, text box text is equal to good morning Belgium, like this. And to get this web part up and running in my SharePoint site, just right-click on top of my project. Let's hit deploy. What's going to happen at this point in time? Well, Visual Studio is going to build my project. It's going to wrap all my code, my features, stuff like that, into a SharePoint solution. That solution will get deployed to SharePoint. All the features will get activated automatically for me. And when Visual Studio is done, I should be able to make use of my very exciting web art in SharePoint. So this is my SharePoint site. Let's switch this page into edit mode. To be able to make use of it. Because of the fact that I just did the deploy, my application pool's recycled. So still in SharePoint 2010, and you've got lots of time as a developer to think about the code that you wrote while you're waiting for your pages to get ready. There we go. Let's add, for example, the web part over here. Let's go to the Insert tab. Let's insert a web part in the custom group. Okay, I've got a pretty nice demo. You can see I've got two visual web parts. I did a quick test this morning to see if everything was okay. I should have given my web part a nicer name than Visual Web Part 1. And now the tricky thing for me is, of course, to figure out which is the one that I just built. Well, let's find out. Oh, I was lucky. There we go, my visual web part 1. If I click my button, good morning, Belgium is being displayed. Now, I know for sure this stuff is not going to get you excited yet, but I just wanted to show you the templates that we've got in Visual Studio. All of that nasty XML that you had to write yourself is generated for you. And the cool thing about those templates in Visual Studio 2010 as well is the fact that if you're not happy with them, not happy with the outcome, you can just change your features. You can change all the XML that's generated for you. See over here, you just have the feature. You can open up the feature in design mode. It's going to show you the feature as it is, like this. And with all the files that you can find in your feature, you can go to the feature element manifest. If you're not happy with it, you can change it, stuff like that. This is, by the way, the feature element manifest that is going to put the .webart file in the webart gallery. Okay, just like in SharePoint 2007, that is. Okay. Now, let me switch back to my presentation. Of course, we will come back to Visual Studio a lot of times later on this day to talk about the different templates that you've got. Now, besides Visual Studio, we also have the SharePoint Designer tool. Another quick question, how many of you liked SharePoint Designer in SharePoint 2007? Well, a few hands, that's very brave. One of the issues that we had with the SharePoint Designer in SharePoint 2007 was the fact that you could do some pretty cool stuff with it, build a master page, build the page layout, build the workflow. But the issue was that we always had to build, let's say, a workflow for a very specific site, for a very specific list. And there was no way for you to easily export the work that you've done and import it in another SharePoint site, even on another SharePoint server, that kind of stuff. Well, those limitations have been solved in SharePoint Designer 2010, mainly. So it is possible now, for example, to build a reusable workflow that is very easy to deploy to another SharePoint server, to another SharePoint site, that kind of stuff. So it's a pretty nice tool also from the point of view as a developer. Even more, for quite some scenarios, it is possible for you to start off your work inside the SharePoint Designer, and if you hit the limitations of the SharePoint Designer, move over to Visual Studio. For example, it's possible to build a reusable workflow inside the SharePoint Designer, export it as a SharePoint solution, and have that solution imported into Visual Studio so you can take the work over there and continue to work in Visual Studio. So my advice, even as developers, check out the SharePoint Designer because it's quite interesting. Another pretty nice thing for developers is the introduction of a thing that's called the Developer Dashboard. And what's the Developer Dashboard in SharePoint 2010? Well, it's a piece of UI that you can add to your pages, your normal pages in SharePoint, that is going to display some debugging information. For example, on the Developer Dashboard, you can find all the events that were triggered in the life cycle of your page. You can see the queries that were executed in your database. You can see the load times of individual web parts, that kind of stuff. So it's a very useful, interesting page, I think, for a lot of SharePoint developers to figure out what's happening, what's making their pages slow, that kind of stuff. Now, the developer dashboard, by default, is not enabled. So if you would like to make use of it, you explicitly have to enable it. A couple of things you can do to get it up to speed, let's say. You can make use of the famous SDS ADM tool that you probably know from SharePoint 2007. You can set the property, which is named developer dashboard, to three values. You can set it to off, which is the default setting. You can set it to on, so it's always shown. Or, in my opinion, the most interesting setting is you can set it to on demand, so you can choose to show it or hide it in the web UI of SharePoint. Now, if you don't like to make use of SDS ADM to make that setting, you can also make use of PowerShell or the object model to configure the developer dashboard. Once you have enabled the developer dashboard using the on-demand switch, you will notice a very small icon to the top right of your page that is going to show the developer dashboard. Very easy for me to show off this developer dashboard. I just need to open up my shell over here, and that's right, SDS ADM. When the thing is loaded, that is minus O, set property, minus property name, developer, minus dashboard, minus property value. Let's set it to on demand. Let's give it a couple of seconds to process. I hope I didn't make any typos over here. It should be okay. And once this command has been executed, I can switch back to my SharePoint user interface and show you the developer dashboard over there. Okay, so far so good. Let me refresh my page to show you the result. Maybe you didn't notice anything special happening, but at the right side, at the top right of my page, you see this very small icon that has been added. That's the icon of the developer dashboard. Nothing is going to happen at first, but if you click on it, your page will be reloaded. And you will still see your page, nothing different. But if you scroll to the bottom, you can see that the developer dashboard has been added. For example, over here you can see all the events with the timings that have been executed. You can see queries that were executed in your database. And this is, I think, very interesting as well. You can see the load times of your web parts. So, for example, if you've got a very slow web part, you can very easily spot it by making use of that developer dashboard. Now, this is the stuff that you just have out of the box. As a developer, you can also add additional information to the developer dashboard. For example, it is possible to have your own event being logged in the developer dashboard, so you will know how long a specific piece of code took to execute in your code. That's not very difficult to accomplish, and I can actually show you that in my visual web part. Let me go, for example, to my visual web part. And let's say in the page load of my visual web part, I'm going to make use of SharePoint monitored scope. Monitored scope. Let's grab the correct namespace for that. And you can give your monitored scope a name, let's say the Belgium demo. And let's do a system.threading.thread.sleep. And let's say we're going to sleep for 300 milliseconds. So I've got some meaningful timings in my developer dashboard. Of course, that should be your real code that is going to do all the heavy work in your web part, for example. Whoops. Oh, that's a nice one. Let me try again. I remember we're still in beta. Okay. I will need to close Visual Studio and start it again. And probably I will need an IIS reset. And just bear with me. And sometimes you notice that the betas are going to lock files that they're building themselves. And to make sure that those files are released, you have to close everything and start over again. Well, not start over again, but open up again. So let me grab my demo code. And let's try again. Okay, right-click deploy. Now it's going to take even more time because of the IIS reset. It should be okay in a couple of seconds. Okay, deploy succeeded. Let's go to SharePoint, and I'm just going to refresh my page over here, which is already going to show that additional information that I've put in my developer dashboard from within my web part. Usually when I have to wait in SharePoint 2010, I make some jokes about Belgian people, but I don't think that's a good idea this morning. A lot of Belgian people over here. No, that's a joke, of course. Okay, come on, SharePoint. Oh, isn't this exciting? And there we go. So if I'm lucky, at the bottom of my page, and there you go, I've got over here my Belgium demo who took, almost 300 milliseconds to execute. So this is going to give you an idea how long pieces of your code had to take before they got executed, stuff like that, which is, of course, very valuable information for you guys as developers. A couple of things that you can do with the developer dashboard. Now, as I mentioned, we will come back to developer productivity, show you more about Visual Studio later on in all our sessions. But the next thing that I would like to talk about is also quite important. It's called the Rich Platform Services. And the first part of those rich platform services are a lot of additions that have been made to the concept of lists and document libraries. I'm quite sure that everybody has used lists and document libraries to store data in their SharePoint sites. Those concepts, of course, still exist in SharePoint 2010, but there have been quite some enhancements related to lists and document libraries. For example, it is now possible to make use of an enhanced lookup field. that is going to allow you to define real relationships between different lists. You can also make use of validation, for example. You can make use of the index creation mechanism that is going to automatically create indexes in your lists and document libraries based on how people are actually using that data. So you will notice in SharePoint 2010, quite a lot of work went into, well, making SharePoint capable to have a lot of data in a single list or a single document library. I'm pretty sure that everybody has heard about the famous 2,000 item limit in lists and in document libraries. We'll still have those limits in SharePoint 2010, but it will be easier for you to make sure that you don't hit those limits. And even if you hit those limits, it will be possible for system administrators to make sure that those large lists will not bring down the performance of your SharePoint environment, and because there is a thing that's called the list query throttling, which is going to allow administrators to specify, for example, if you've got a list with, 10,000 items in it, that if there is a view that has more than 5,000 items, the view will not be rendered anymore. So the user will not see the data because it contains, the view, for example, contains too many items. So all kind of functionality to make that easier to deal with in SharePoint 2010. Now, let me just show off a very quick demo. This is my SharePoint site. And in my SharePoint site, let me very quickly create a new list. One thing that I learned, don't mention very quickly in a demo, then it's not going to work very quickly. I'm just going to create a custom list. Let's call this list Departments. Departments. And in this list, I'm going to create some columns. For example, every department, let's say, should have, a code, which is a single line of text. And every department should have, a manager. A manager. Also single line of text, very basic. And let's add a couple of departments. And let's say I've got the sales department. This is the code. The manager is Steve. And let's say I've got, for example, the ICT department. And the manager is Bill over there. Now, what's the thing that I'm going to do with this list? Well, I prepared another list in my site. I've got over here the employees list. And what I would like to do is I would like to add a column to this employee list that is actually a lookup to my department list. You could already do that in SharePoint 2007. So just create a column called department, make use of the lookup column. And for the lookup column, you can specify over here the list that you would like to make use of to do the lookup. That will be my department list. And let's display the title of that department list. So far, pretty much the same as in 2007. First thing that I can mention at the bottom over here is you can choose to enforce the relationship. So it is possible to specify, well, this relationship is going to make use of a strict delete. And that means that if you try to delete a department that still has some employees in it, that delete will not be able to succeed. You can also make use of a cascade delete that's going to make sure that whenever you delete a department, that also the corresponding items in that department, the corresponding employees in that department are being deleted as well. Let me make use of the restrict delete. In the same demo, I can also show you the enhanced lookup column that will not only allow you to do a lookup to one single field, but you can specify additional fields that will be used to display your lookup data. For example, I can display for the department also the code and the manager, let's say. And when I'm done, let's hit OK. I got a message that an index should be created. That's the auto index creation mechanism. So when I go to one of those employees in my list, or if I would create a new one, of course, as you can see, I can select my department exactly like it was in SharePoint 2007. But notice when I save, not only the department is being displayed, but also the codes and the manager of this department. So basically, you're now joining data that is coming from multiple lists in one view, which was not possible in SharePoint 2007. Of course, that's also going to work for the older department. If I go for the sales department, you will see that it's being displayed like that. If I now go back to my department, if I would try to delete the ICT department, we're going to see it's not going to work. I will have an error over here. The item cannot be deleted because an item in the employees list is related to the item in the department list. And that's the enforced relationship behavior that I enabled as well. Another very quick thing that I can show you over here is the validations, or are the validation options that we've got in SharePoint 2010. You know, validation in lists and document libraries was quite basic in SharePoint 2007. Usually, you could only specify if a field, if a column was required or not required. For number fields, you could specify minimum values, maximum values, but that was basically it. In SharePoint 2010, you can apply validation on the level of individual columns, and you can apply validation at the level of list items or documents in a document library. Why is that interesting? Well, those validations are based on formulas, and you can compare those formulas with the formulas that you would type in Excel, for example. So you can pre-build formulas that will check if this number is not higher than that number and this field is not equal to that one. And you can build your own complex validation yourself without writing any code for that. Let me show you how that's going to work very quickly. If I drill down into my list settings, and if I would go, for example, what is this list? This is my departments list. If I go to the code of my departments list, let's say we have a business rule at UTU where we specify every code of every department has to be 3 characters in length. So what you can do is you can open up column validation over here, and you can specify the formula that should be calculated. I'm going to make use of the length of my code, and should be equal to 3. Like this. At the bottom, you can define your user message. Let's say department codes must be 3 characters. Let's hit OK. There we go. Now, if I go to my department list, if I try to create a new department, if I would edit an existing one, let's say after sales, whatever. Let's hit save. As you can see, it's not going to work because department codes must be 3 characters. So that's the validation that you can do at the level of your column. Once again, you can do the same trick at the level of your list item itself. So it is possible to compare different column values, see if they're okay, that kind of stuff. So a bunch of enhancements to the concepts that you already are familiar with, lists and document libraries. Okay. Another very important thing to mention, another very important component that has been added to SharePoint 2010 is the component that we're going to talk about later on today even more. It's called Business Connectivity Services, or abbreviated to BCS. And you can think about Business Connectivity Services as the successor of the Business Data Catalog. For the people that know the Business Data Catalog in SharePoint 2007, you know that you can use the BDC in SharePoint 2007 to bring in external data that's coming from a database or a web service, visualize it in web parts, doing a lookup in a list, that kind of stuff. Well, you can also do all that kind of stuff with Business Connectivity Services. But one of the big things in Business Connectivity Services is the fact that you can now have both read and write capabilities. So it is possible to read data from your external data source, but it's also possible to update data using BCS. Also very interested in that concept is the concept of an external list, which will allow you to show that external data in the format of a list inside your SharePoint UI. And I'm very sure that Scott is going to show you some cool demos afterwards in the next sessions that we've got on later today. So this is the story. We've got SharePoint, which is a pretty nice data platform. The data platform will allow you to store data in lists and in document libraries with all the enhancements that that we already discussed. And if you are a SharePoint 2007 developer, you probably know the object model, the server object model that we had in SharePoint 2007. Well, that one is still available in SharePoint 2010, and that will allow you to write data executed on your server to load, for example, items from a list or a document library. Pretty cool new thing in SharePoint 2010 is that we don't only have a server object model in SharePoint 2010, but we also have a client object model. And the client object model will allow you to access your SharePoint data from remote clients as well. And there are actually three flavors of that client object model, one for .NET applications, one for CivilEye applications, and one for JavaScript applications. And the next session that we're going to discuss later on today is going to discuss some more details about that client object model in SharePoint 2010. In my opinion, very interesting. We have even more capabilities in SharePoint 2010 to work with our SharePoint data. For example, there is the link to SharePoint provider, which is going to allow you to build link queries on your server that will get data from lists and document libraries. Very, very easy because all the nasty CAML will be generated. We're also going to talk about that one later on today. And to expose your data in an even an easier way, there is the REST API that we've got in SharePoint 2010. REST is maybe a protocol that you know from sites like Twitter and LinkedIn and Flickr, all those fancy Web 2.0 sites typically expose their data using a REST API. Usually they can also consume data coming from REST APIs. And well, SharePoint 2010 is just, let's say, a provider of REST data. That's a very easy thing for me to show off. For example, I've got over here my task list, just a normal task list in SharePoint 2010. It contains two tasks. Let's say you would like to consume this data in another application using the REST API. Then you can just make use of the URL /vti/bin/list/data.svc/tasks. And you will notice that Internet Explorer is going to render your tasks over here as a RSS feed. Now, if you don't like that, you can also switch it off. If you go over here to your content, let's turn off the feed reading view. And let's close the browser to make sure the setting is applied. Whoops. What went wrong? Should be okay. Oh, we didn't see that. This is my list data for my task list that is now, well, just available in an RSS, well, not an RSS feed, but an XML format. I can grab, for example, also the task with ID number 1. And if I'm only interested in the title, I can grab the title as well. So it's very easy to consume your list data by making use of this API. Scott is going to talk about this REST API in more detail later on today as well. Okay. Some other improvements that are related to the data that is stored in SharePoint 2010 related to the thing that we already had in SharePoint 2007, the event handlers or the event receivers as they were being called. Of course, it will be very easy for you to build event receivers in Visual Studio 2010. We've got templates for that. Just like in 2007, we've got synchronous and asynchronous events. And a very nice addition, in my opinion, to that mechanism is the fact that in SharePoint 2010, we can now have list event receivers or event receivers in general that are going to allow you as a developer to specify the URL of a page that will be displayed when your event is being canceled. For the people that have written a cancelable event in SharePoint 2007, you probably know when you cancel an event, the very ugly default exception page is being displayed to tell the user what went wrong or what should be done. Well, now as a developer, you can choose to build your own custom page to display that custom page as a custom information page, for example, when maybe the deletion of a task didn't completely work. How do you do that? Well, very basic. Just go to Visual Studio, click New Project. And over there, we're going to notice that we can make use of a template for doing that. And we've got over here a template called Event Receiver. Let's click OK. In a second, we will see a small question, or a small wizard, better, that is going to allow us to specify what kind of an event that I would like to make use of. For example, I can go for list events list item events or web events, whatever. Also some new web events that are quite interesting. And I can specify I would like to have an event when an item is being deleted, like this. Let's click Finish. The code is partially generated for me. You see over here the item deleting event. So you can write your condition if you would like to cancel the event, just like in 2007 you set the cancel property to true. But also by making use of your properties, you can specify URL of a page, the redirect URL, which is just, let's say, a redirect to dummy.aspx. So that is the page that will be displayed when your event is being canceled. Once again, in SharePoint 2007, this would be your ugly exception page. I'm not going to get this deployed. I just wanted to show you the concepts in this code. Okay. Workflow, very important already in SharePoint 2007, got quite a lot of improvements in SharePoint 2010. You can see a lot of those improvements being displayed on my slide over here. I'm not going to mention them all one by one. I'm just going to pick a couple of them. For you guys as developers, quite important to know, in SharePoint Designer, it is now possible to build reusable workflows. So you can build a workflow that you can then make use of in multiple other sites, even export it into a SharePoint solution. Also in Visual Studio, we've got quite some enhancements. For example, in Visual Studio, we got better templates for building workflows. I don't know if you ever tried to build a workflow in Visual Studio 2008 for SharePoint 2007 that has custom initiation and custom association forms. If you succeeded, you can think of yourself as a very good developer, I think, because it was quite a difficult task. Now we just have those templates built in Visual Studio 2010. So building a custom association page, for example, is just as easy as right-clicking new item and choosing for that association page template. Also, the visualization of workflows in SharePoint 2010 has been improved. You probably know the workflow history page that showed you all the information about a running workflow, when it was started, who has started, which are the tasks that were being created, that kind of stuff. Well, in SharePoint 2010, a workflow can be visualized in a Visio diagram, so a very visual way, let's say, to represent your workflow. And I'm going to come back to that visualization later on today, and when we're going to talk about Silverlight in SharePoint 2010. But a couple of important enhancements to the workflow concept in SharePoint 2010. Service applications, think of them as successors of the shared service provider infrastructure that we had in SharePoint 2007. Usually only exciting for system administrators, but I think quite important for you guys as developers as well, because you will write applications that will run in the context and not of a shared service provider anymore, but your sites will be making use of service applications. Service applications in SharePoint 2010 will solve quite a lot of issues that we had with shared service providers in SharePoint 2007. You know, when shared service providers, you've got the concepts like search, like the business data catalog, like usage reporting, the user profile database, audiences, that kind of stuff. And the thing was, you could only assign one big block of that shared service provider to a web application. And it was not possible to specify, for example, I would like to make use of this user profile service and this search and maybe another usage reporting that is shared with another web application. The concept of service applications is much more flexible, so administrators will have the opportunity to very quickly, very easily specify that their components, their building blocks of SharePoint sites should be shared with other sites or not in a very easy, flexible way. Also from the point of view of a developer, important to know that you can build your own service applications as well. Let's say if you don't like the search engine of SharePoint 2010 and you would like to replace it with your own very powerful, much better search engine, it's an extensibility option as well. You can build your own service application that will plug in into the architecture of SharePoint 2010. Some other enhancements that you probably already saw, the enhancements to the user interface. In SharePoint 2010, we have the introduction of the ribbon. We've got the thing that is called the status bar, and we've got notifications. So a couple of concepts that you probably already noticed during my demos. Well, I just want to mention that everything that is new inside the user interface of SharePoint 2010 can be customized by you as a developer. So if you would like to build a custom ribbon, or if you would like to build a custom notification area, that is totally possible. And it's not very difficult to do. You can make use of the same techniques, for example, to extend the ribbon as you used in SharePoint 2007 to extend, let's say, the site actions menu. So you just have to build a feature that contains a custom action that will describe what should be displayed on top of the ribbon that should be extra on top of the ribbon. Notifications, for example, can be built by making use of JavaScript functions. SharePoint has a pretty nice JavaScript API that you can leverage as a SharePoint developer as well. The same story for dialogues. You probably noticed the dialogues that were shown in SharePoint 2010 to create a new column, to create a new list item, that kind of stuff. Well, as a developer, you can also build your own custom dialogues. So if you ever feel the need to display some exciting information inside the dialogue, you will be able to do that. Okay, I already mentioned Silverlight a couple of times, I think, during my talk. Silverlight, I think, will become very important in SharePoint 2010. Remember, Silverlight is the technology from Microsoft to build rich internet applications. And we're going to see also in my session later on today that Silverlight is used quite a lot out of the box in SharePoint 2010. For example, we've got the media player web part, which is a Silverlight control that can display a movie or that can play an audio file, something like that. We have a real Silverlight web part that can actually display any Silverlight application that you want in SharePoint 2010. We've got the pretty nice object model that we can make use of in Silverlight. And once again, I will talk about that later on today. And of course, the REST API that I showed you can also be consumed in Silverlight. And so Silverlight and SharePoint 2010, I think, is a pretty nice combination. Okay, so far, very quickly, the developer productivity and the rich platform services. And I would like to invite Scott on stage to talk a little bit about the enhancements that we've got related to flexible deployment. And one of them is, of course, sandbox solutions.
Thank you, Jan. Okay, great. So we don't have a particular module in this day around sandbox solutions. There is a dedicated session later in the week that I'll be doing. But what is sandbox solutions? Sandbox solutions is the idea that when you create a solution inside of SharePoint, instead of that solution being allowed to touch anything that it wants, we're going to put it in a nice, warm environment where it can't do do damage. So if you think about some of the problems that we've had with SharePoint solutions in the past, in a lot of cases, that's caused by the fact that those solutions had to or would by choice be deployed into the GAC. So people would take a lot of their assemblies, put them inside the GAC. And of course, once something is inside the GAC, it has full trust, it can do whatever it wants. So if you have a solution that's running around, say, looping through all the web applications, looping through all the site collections, looping through all the lists, looping through all the list items, searching for list items that have something to do with Scott, that's a very expensive application. It's not one that we would normally write. But if you then take that, deploy it to the GAC, and then if you then take that and, say, make a web part of it and put it on the home page of the portal, then what you have is something that really impacts performance. And now all of a sudden, the home page of the portal isn't loading well, and everyone says, oh, SharePoint's terrible. You know, it's terrible. Look how slow this is, right? And a lot of times it's due to bad architecture. So what a sandbox solution does, it gives you a mechanism to take applications that are behaving poorly and to shut them down. So we're going to put applications in an environment where the pieces of the object model that they can call are restricted, and the code access security policies that they operate under are very restricted. So the idea is to just create this environment that makes it very difficult for a poorly written application to bring down the farm. The other thing about them is that the idea here is to really provide this balance between what it is the developers need and what it is that the IT pros need. So IT pros are really primarily concerned about farm stability, so that's great. We put you in a sandbox where you can't hurt anything. But then the developers say, hey, what do you mean? I can only call part of the object model. I have these code access security policies that are keeping me from, for example, calling external WCF services. So does that mean I just have to give up all my flexibility now so that the farm can be in good shape? And the answer is no, we're really trying to balance those things. So we have many mechanisms, several different ways that we can sort of break out of the sandbox and safely reach out and touch external resources. So again, we don't talk about them so much in this particular session, but we do have a dedicated session later in the week. And it's one that I would really recommend that you guys think about coming to, because from my point of view, the sandbox solution is the primary deployment mechanism that developers should be using. If I were an IT pro, I would make this the developers prove to me that they could not do what they wanted to do in the sandbox before I allowed them to put anything in the GAC. So I think you're going to see a lot more governance around what developers can do and where their solutions can go. Okay, next is a little bit just about packaging. So we've got much better packaging inside of Visual Studio 2010 than we've had in the past. Jan talked a little bit about the tools here. So we're still packaging as WSPs. Everything you'll create will be a WSP. But SharePoint now inside of Visual Studio 2010 gives you much better ways to make that happen. In fact, what I'd like to do is let's just shift a little bit here. And hopefully I've got my right one here. Oh, that doesn't look right. Let's try that one. That looks good. Okay, great. So I'm just going to go over to my laptop, and we'll talk just a little bit about packaging. I'm going to do a quick check of time here. Okay. So what I've got here is I've got a solution. And this one, if I just go ahead and open up the elements file here, you'll see that this solution, for those that are familiar with it, is using a custom action element here. And this custom action element is just allowing me to put a new element on a toolbar or a menu. And in this case, what we're doing is we're adding a simple URL to our site actions menu that's just going to open up the central admin. So we're going to call this the central admin link. And if we look inside here at the group ID and location elements, the group ID and location is what SharePoint uses to determine where this particular new item is going to go. So this is telling it, please put it on the site actions menu. So we talked a little bit about the concept of sandbox solutions. This will fit into our larger discussion of packaging. But if I click over here on the project, I want to point out a couple of things to you here. If you look down in the properties, you'll notice that this has a sandbox solution property that can be set to either true or false here. If I change it, it gives me a little warning explaining to me that there will be consequences of picking a sandbox solution, or if it's a sandbox solution, changing it back. And again, this has more to do with aspects in your project and things that you're allowed to touch, parts of the object model that you can talk to. But this dictates where the package will be deployed. So when we talk about solution packaging, and particularly if you tie it back to sandbox solutions, the packages can be deployed either as they were in 2007. So a farm level feature goes into central admin, and you'll find it there inside the solution gallery for central administration. If on the other hand you pick a sandbox solution, what you'll find is there is a new gallery associated with each site collection. And the site collection has its own gallery where the sandbox solutions go. Visual Studio will deploy to either one of those locations based on the setting for the sandbox solution and then also the URL down here. So this URL property, the site URL property that you see, that's the site URL that you saw Jan pick in when the wizard first came up and said, hey, do you want sandbox solution and what URL should I use? So important to know as developers that you can change these things once they're set here. And based on these two settings determines where it goes, whether it goes into central admin or whether it goes into the site collection. If you come up to the project and right click it, you can see that we have several different options here on the menu. We can simply do a deploy, which Jan was doing. And when you do a deploy, Visual Studio is going to package this into a WSP, and it's going to put it into the appropriate gallery, either central administration or the site collection gallery. But I also like to point out that you have a couple of different options here. Of course, you can just do standard builds to make sure that your project is working okay. And you can also select to package the project. And if you do a package out of here, it's going to create that WSP file for you. And you'll find that WSP file in the bin directory of your project. And that WSP file is essentially a cabinet file that has everything your application needs to run. So one of the things I like to say to SharePoint developers is that, you know, sometimes people ask, well, what exactly does a SharePoint developer do? Now, my answer is always, we create WSP files. So if you're delivering to someone something other than a WSP file, you haven't finished your job. And so what Visual Studio is really helping us do here is to create that WSP, and we can then take that WSP right out of the bin directory. We can bring it to QA and install it. We can bring it to production and install it there. So this is really the common currency. It always was, even in 2007. This is the common currency that all SharePoint developers use. But in 2010, much, much easier for us to make those. How many folks in here ever made a WSP file in 2007? All right, so no more DDF files. No more DDF files. That's a big thing. So how are we doing?
Okay.
We got a few minutes left here. All right, so we talk a little bit about Team Foundation Server here. Is really the key thing with Team Foundation Server is just to point out that you have it. So if you've done any work under 2007 where you tried to do team environments, this was kind of complicated, right? It was, what type of environment should the developer have? How are we all going to work together to share a SharePoint server? And then ultimately, what do we do with our code? Well, now we've got integration into Visual Studio 2010 and our SharePoint projects with Team Foundation Server. And the summary, you want to wrap it up for us?
Okay. Well, I know this must have been a session with a lot of information for you guys. But I really hope we've been able to prove to you that SharePoint 2010 is a very interesting developer platform. We talked about the developer opportunity. Key things to remember over there is the fact that we've got Visual Studio 2010 with great templates in Visual Studio 2010. We've got also the SharePoint Designer that is, remember, important for you guys as developers. And as I mentioned, it is possible to take the work that you've done in the SharePoint Designer and reuse it in Visual Studio. So don't leave that tool laying aside, let's say. Of course, I also talked about the fact that you can make use of SharePoint 2010 on top of your client operating system, not your server alone anymore. Second thing that we talked about already in this first presentation, the rich platform services. And remember all the enhancements that are related to the data platform and the enhancements in lists, document libraries, that kind of stuff. The integration of line of business data with business connectivity services that we're going to talk about more later on, and the enhancements that we've got in the workflow platform. And to finish off, as Scott mentioned, we've got flexible deployment, very important for you guys as developers, because you will be the ones that are going to create those SharePoint solutions. We've got a Visual Studio that will help you creating those SharePoint solutions. No more DDF files, no more WSP builder. And additionally, as a developer, you've got the opportunity to build a SharePoint solution that will be deployed either to the SharePoint Central Administration, and that is farm-wide, or that is going to get deployed to the site collection with the help of a sandbox solution. And I think those sandbox solutions, as Scott mentioned, are going to become really, really important because of the governments that typically big enterprises will actually make use of. But also, if you think about what's happening now with the cloud, everybody's talking about the cloud. You can build your applications and deploy them to the cloud. And you can do the same thing for SharePoint. And maybe you already know, but Microsoft has an offering for SharePoint, and it is running in the cloud. It's called SharePoint Online. How many people are using SharePoint Online? Only very few hands. The idea goes as follows. You give Microsoft some money, and they will give you a SharePoint site hosted on their servers in their data centers in return. The advantage, of course, is that you don't have to, that you don't need to have an administrator anymore. You don't need to have infrastructure. You don't need to have licenses to install on your servers, that kind of stuff. The drawback in SharePoint 2007 in that area is that, you cannot deploy a SharePoint solution to a SharePoint site that you're making use of in SharePoint Online. Why is that? Well, on the same server as the one that you're using for your SharePoint site in the cloud, probably Microsoft has some other sites for other customers. And if you deploy a solution in SharePoint 2007, that solution will go to central admin, so it will be server farm-wide. So that is not allowed unless you have that very expensive offering, which is called SharePoint Online Dedicated, and where they will give you your own server, but it's only for a very big enterprise because it costs a lot of money. Microsoft already announced that for SharePoint 2010, they will also have SharePoint Online, and it will be possible for you guys to extend SharePoint Online in the cloud by making use of sandbox solutions. So there will be an opportunity to run your code in the cloud, even if it's not on your own server, but hosted by Microsoft. So I think that's also a great opportunity to make use of flexible deployment sandbox solutions over there. And I really hope Microsoft is going to build, let's say, like a marketplace where you can go to and see for some cool solutions that you may want to make use of in your sites, grab them, deploy them, and that kind of stuff without making use of those system administrators. Okay, so far for the topics that we had on our agenda at this point in time. I hope you still you guys will still come back for the next sessions that we've got on the agenda, I think in like half an hour or something like that. And the first session that we're going to talk about will go, of course, much more into the details about the client object models that we've got in SharePoint 2010. Okay.